Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Rise Together podcast. I have a treat for you today. One of my favorite human beings on the entire planet, Carlos Whitaker, Los Wit, leader of the Insta Familia. He is here today. I am sitting in real time in his kitchen outside of Nashville, Tennessee. It's beautiful, but our conversation is even better. Sit back, relax, and prepare yourself for a big old dose of hope. Carlos Whitaker is on the show today.
What would the world look like if we all pushed ourselves to have candid conversations with people who didn't look like us, think like us, or live like us? I'm Dave Hollis, and I'm on a mission to learn more about this world by meeting more of the people who live here. You may not always agree with everything you hear, but I guarantee you'll come away more informed on topics you might never have thought to seek out before. This isn't just a podcast, it's a community. And when we raise each other up, we all rise together.
Listen, this is like, of all the places that I've wanted to come, don't tell the other people.
Okay, we won't let them know.
The thing I was looking forward to most, because watching what is happening in your life in real time has been surreal at best, but also, as much as I am just getting to know you, I feel pride for the things that I am watching happening inside of your Instagram and this Insta Familia.
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, I'm just excited you're in my kitchen. You're like, this is like, this is my safe space, and this is like where I like, and like, Dave is sitting in front of me. You know, it's funny, you walked in here and you were like, I feel like I've been here before. But the thing with Instagram, when you film stories, they're backwards.
Yeah.
You know, like the shirts will be backwards.
Oh, yeah.
So people sometimes will come in here that have only seen it on Instagram, and they're like, but I thought that was over there. It's like, no, it's because it's on Instagram.
No, my instinct, honestly, was to hide for someone coming in for a surprise party that was Pirates themed.
Sure, yeah, because that's just what we're going to do. But no, I appreciate it. I've been having fun the last few months, you know, really the last few years on Instagram, but really specifically the last few months trying to deal hope, man.
You are hope dealer extraordinaire. I want to talk about it in a second, but the conceit of coming in the first place was this idea that, hey, I conjured some peace on a patio.
Yeah.
Super important as noise was just crushing on all sides. Yeah. I was interested to understand where others found their peace. Mm. I mistakenly thought that I would be sitting on patios exclusively and have only one time sat on a patio so far.
That's right.
Is this kitchen, is this house, these four walls, is this something that is where your peace is protected?
It is. For me, this is my safe haven. I mean, you're in it. We don't live in a big house. We live actually purposely in a small house. We've downsized and downsized every single time to where now we've got, you know, our three teenagers, my wife, our dog, our chickens and goats, they don't ever get in the house or whatever, but it's just a small place where I feel so safe.
Yeah.
I feel peaceful. And the chaos of family for me is really what keeps me grounded and keeps me focused and keeps me peaceful as I'm doing this really intense work, as I'm doing work that is really, you know, it takes a lot of, it takes a toll on my soul.
Yeah.
As I'm talking about hard things, as I'm having hard conversations, I come back here. I literally just felt it when I breathed right now. Like that breath, I can feel it. My lungs fill up even bigger when I'm right here in this kitchen, because this is just where my family is.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
I feel it. Yeah. It's weird. There's an energy in this space. Yeah. You can tell that peace is a thing that exists here.
Yeah.
There's been some things that have happened lately that I want to give you credit for, because you deserve credit for it. And I also just appreciate that there is no way these things could happen without higher powers also being complicit in the work. But the story of Tony is one that just is mind-boggling. I love so much that it was picked up by national media. It was deservingly picked up. But the story, if people don't know the story, you had a speaking engagement.
I did.
That speaking engagement was canceled.
And I love that you're talking about this part, because
this is important.
A lot of people don't talk about this part, so keep going.
No, this is important, right? The speaking engagement was canceled, and there was frustration for the cancellation, in part because it required you to have a layover for now a redirected flight back home, and your plans
having, and my loss of income.
And your loss of income having changed.
Yeah.
And in the time when you not getting what you were hoping for.
Right.
What happened?
So, I'm in Dallas, and my next speaking event is in Memphis. And so I'm supposed to just fly through Atlanta to get to Memphis. And then on my flight, I find out COVID, something happened with COVID, event got canceled. I'm frustrated. Like, oh my gosh, I've got to go back. Like, we were planning on using this money for certain bills, yada, yada. And so I'm on my phone like I always am, right? I'm like going through the airport, talking to all my Insta family. They're going like, guys, the event got canceled. You know, I'm a little frustrated. I remember saying it. I was going actually underneath like the rainforest in the Atlanta airport. And I went up the Terminal A escalator because my next flight was now going to be in an hour and a half. And I was hungry. And so I normally go to the Sky Club because I'm like a snobby Delta Sky Medallion, Diamond Medallion Elite. I'm
you
that
travel
guy.
A bit.
Yeah, I travel a bit. So I'm like, I'm going to go to the Sky Club and get my free meal. But I heard a guy playing the piano just kind of around the corner. And I was like, I'm going to go over there. I'll eat a Chick-fil-A right next to it. And I looked and no one was paying attention to him. This guy's like just going to town. He's just going. And I'm like, how was this guy giving everything he has and no one's paying attention? So something in me was just like, you just need to see him. He needs to see you see him. So I grabbed my chicken biscuit. I walked over. I plopped myself 2 feet from his piano. And I just kind of leaned in. And you could kind of see him like, whoa, like this guy's paying attention. And then I looked up on, about 20 minutes later, I look up and I see his tip jar. That had like 15, 20 bucks in it. And I'm like, this guy's playing for tips?
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to be like, good Samaritan guy, I'm going to give him $100. Like, look, patting myself on the back. Like, look at this. So I walk over to him and I was like, I didn't have any cash. So I was like, hey, do you have Venmo? He's like, no. He's like, I have Cash App. And I said, oh, you know, let me cash it. So I cashed apped him, you know, his tip. And then he's like, wow, $100. You know, so he came over to talk to me. And I asked him his story. And then he tells me he's on dialysis 9 hours a night, kidney failure, used to play on cruises, used to play the club scene. Now he just comes 4 hours a day to play for tips at the Atlanta airport. And that's just when it hit me.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. He goes back and plays the piano. And I said, I've got 30 minutes till my flight leaves. How big of a tip can I raise on Instagram in 30 minutes? So I started a story him playing live. And I said, here's my Venmo. I will just put the money. I'll give the money to him. And so people just started ding, 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 ding. And I don't know if you're familiar on Venmo, when someone sends you something, the push notification sound sounds like a cash register opening from like the 80s. Yeah. Cha-ching, right, like
yep.
It used to.
Yep.
So my phone starts going cha-ching, 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 just over and over. And at 1,000, 2,000, 20 minutes left, 3,000, 4,000, 15 minutes left, 8,000. And then at 30 minutes, right before I had a sprint to get on my flight, it was at $10,000. So I called him back over, and this is the part of the video that went viral. I said, hey, man, and he's kind of leaning over. He's like, yeah, and I said, I just want to let you know that I'm about to give you a $10,000 tip, and his jaw drops. He's like, what the bleep are you talking about?
Yeah.
And it was so human. Like, his reaction was so, and I was like, well, it's not really me. It's my Insta familia. It's the people that follow me on social media. There's like 170,000 people that have given this to you. And he's like, who are they? You know, he asks me. And I said, he didn't understand, right? Again, I don't think he didn't understand Instagram. He starts crying. We hug. I leave. I fly. I get home. By the time I land, it's at $20,000. And then I said, let me have you on my podcast tonight. You know. So then him and his wife, I tell them on the podcast, it's at $44,000. By the end of the night, it was at $70,000 by the next day. And who knows how much more it grew from that point. But, you know, it just was, to your point, here I was planning what I needed to happen in my life.
Yeah.
And how many times does God disturb your plans for something way greater than you never imagined was even necessary in your life? And so, you know, I had just an influx. It went viral. We were on Good Morning America, on World News Tonight, on all the things. And I have all these probably 70,000 new Instagram followers in the course of a few weeks because of this that are now like, oh, this is what you do? What's the next thing? Let's go.
Yeah,
let's go.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, wow, there's more people to give now. And they're the superheroes. They're the ones that are doing it. I'm just the conduit. And people are just excited to get back to, I think, how to be human again.
Yeah.
Like how to like change the world with people that don't look like you, talk like you, think like you, eat like you, and they're just doing it, man.
Yeah, and hope is a byproduct of that connecting tissue humanity that we all want to be part
Absolutely.
Of.
Absolutely.
The thing I love about the story is, one, the disruption in your plans creating the actual outcome that was intended. Two, this universal thing. We all want to be seen. And Tony, it makes me want to cry, but Tony wanted to be seen like all of us want to be seen. And that you're, having heard the music, you could say it happened to be because it was loud enough. I'm going to argue that you heard the music because you were meant to hear it. And it brought you to him so he could be seen. What I also think is interesting is that your original instinct was a $100 tip that turned into a $70,000 tip.
Totally.
Which is just like, again, I think there's this human instinct nature of us never really believing that we can have an impact as big as we ultimately can until we do.
Right.
And there was something about that first tip that actually opened the door for the bigger tip. But you took the first step.
You're preaching now.
It took some courage, though, to just even like find something good in something that was frustrating for you.
And to your point, that first tip, it that could have been enough. That could have been the part of the story that, you know what, he got a $100 tip. He was so grateful for that $100 tip. Like, he was like, wow, this is amazing, and there was a connection, and that could have been it. So don't think that it always has to turn into some miraculous, massive thing. Just that first step, to your point, is all it takes to change somebody. But what if taking that first step not only changes that one person, but changes thousands of people that you never knew?
It's so good. And I love, too, like the impulse then that the community who've made themselves a part of something bigger than themselves and have witnessed now something that affords them hope or connection are hungry for what ends up being next. And the way that you were able to show up for those affected by fires in Northern California, I mean, there's it's story after story. And it's the beginning of story after story.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're someone who has had a lot of identity change over time. I'm someone who's had a lot of identity change over time. I mean, this most recent chapter, my primary identity was husband, and then that shifting, I'd lost a sense of who I was until I could find it. How do you define yourself?
That's a great question. You know, I look back, somebody asked me about all of the attention that I'm getting, and I say, I'm actually grateful that this isn't happening to me when I'm 27. Because I feel like I've been through so much bleep that I've seen everything fall apart, that now I'm just so honestly grateful to have a seat at the table with these people whose lives are being changed. And so, like, my identity isn't based in how much I raise, isn't based in, like, all I want to be known for now. And I'm going to do a whole bunch of great, more things, I think. God has big plans for me. I honestly believe that.
Hear, hear.
But my identity is just being a good dad and being a good human and helping people see their fullest potential and in helping people heal. That's what I want. That's just what I want to do every day. That can look different ways. It's looked like Carlos, the musician signed to a record label back in 2008, right? And that was me helping people heal. It can look like Carlos being a consultant for nonprofits doing this. It can look like Carlos being an author, a speaker, an Instagram influencer that's changing people's lives. As long as it stays consistent for me that I'm just trying to help people become fully healed humans. And that's what I want my identity to be found in.
It's interesting. Before we came on, I was telling just like the broad conceit of the book is this idea, hey, we each are made with really impeccable design. Like there's intention behind why we're here. And the idea of how we honor the intention of our creator is the thing I think each of us are meant to do. But the form that that takes is something that I do think that differs over time. And that there isn't a singular way to fully use your potential. It's a thing that's just going to ebb and flow. I'm excited about what ends up coming next because there's so many things that you could be prepared for. Since the book is about courage and the kind of courage it takes to fully stand into this intention, I feel like there are a lot of big doors that are about to open for you. And I'm curious if there's equal parts excitement and worry. Is it just all excitement? Like, where do you see yourself needing to have some courage for everything that feels like is on the cusp of happening for you?
I think something that for me, courage is like a daily thing for me, is the work that I have to continue to do to believe that I am worthy of this calling. Where I have to find courage on a daily basis for me is I have to make sure that I don't continue to believe the lie that I am not worthy to carry this mantle, or believe the lie that I'm not able to. You know, all of these lies that we believe a lot of times come from childhood. And so, you know, it takes courage every day for me to look in the mirror and go, you know what? You can do this, and you're worthy of this. Yeah. I mean, that's a bigger thing, is that we just have to believe that our worth is what our worth really is. And that's where I have to find the courage every single day, is to just break past the lies that I believe. And this is, you know, I wrote a book on this, you know, just on limiting beliefs and lies. And it's still something that I do every single day.
Yeah.
But it takes courage, you know, and it takes some courage, because I do get a little overwhelmed with, I mean, this is, Dave, this is a lot. $650,000 in the last 2.5 months that have been filtered through my personal Venmo account, that all these people just trust me with their money and they don't even blink.
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot of weight. That's a lot of, and I don't ever want to lose that. Like, I don't want to just be like, oh, this is like, I want to constantly feel the weight of these people trust you.
Yeah.
And it's taken 15 years of me being online to get to this level of trust with a lot of these people. There's some weight in that, and I don't want to lose that weight, but I also don't want that weight to be my limiting factor. You know, I want to make sure that I look at my design and then see the way that God has designed me, and allow that to give me the courage to move.
That's good.
Yeah.
You've made somewhat of a reputation in having courage to have hard conversations.
Yeah.
Right? And it's, I think, the hallmark of how I would describe you, is like someone who has the capacity to build bridges of empathy between people of different backgrounds in a way that affords understanding, even if it doesn't create agreement.
Right.
And
right.
I think there is, I mean, if we could clone that, right, that is the salve that is so needed in a totally divided and more divisive world that we're living in every day.
Yeah.
Is this a thing that just naturally was a part of your being, or is it something that you grew into? Like, how did you find yourself wading into conversations around race, or conversations around structures that are, you know, oppressing people in some capacity in a way that might make someone who bristles at the idea of privilege capable of even just hearing the counterpoint?
Yeah, wow. You know, I know I've not always been that way. No, I wasn't always the one to have these conversations and lead these conversations. You know, I used to consider myself, back in like 2010, blog days, if people even remember those days, more of like a shock jock of like, yeah, I'm gonna have hard conversations, but I'm gonna do it in a shocking way that's gonna disturb and disrupt you. And if you like me, that's fine. If you don't, whatever. And, you know, and again, that was kind of like 30-year-old Carlos.
Yeah.
But as I've grown and as I've matured and as I've gone through things where I'm like, whoa, life isn't actually about that. I have matured into a place where, you know what? I've seen more people grow through empathy and understanding than I have through, you know, being a rage-filled shock jock on the internet, right? Like, that's just...
Winning someone by debate rarely works.
Show me where one person really changed their mind in a comment thread on a Facebook, you know, post. It just hasn't happened. So what I did was I kind of like, you know what, I'm gonna leave that part behind, and I'm just gonna be like happy family guy. And so like, oh, we started a YouTube channel, and I had my family vlog, and we're traveling, and I'm filming my kids, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, look at this happy little, you know, interracial family. This is like so cute to watch. And so like, it's great. I'm writing like fluffy books. I mean, they were good books, but some of them were a little fluffy. And then like, I'm speaking at churches, and people feel good, and I'm like the feel good guy. And so like, here I unintentionally built this brand of like just being like the you know, happy fluffy dad, right? And everyone's like, oh my gosh, look at this cute little family. And then 2020 hit.
Yeah.
And then I kind of was taken aback as to like, most of the people that followed me on the internet, I started seeing things they were posting, and I was like, wow,
inconsistent.
Like, wait a second, like, we don't have the same beliefs. And what I didn't want to do is lose them. What I didn't want to do is be like, you're wrong, let me lose you. So what did I do? I realized I've got to create a safe space to have conversations with these people, even though I vehemently disagree with them, in a way that is safe enough for them be willing to just see me. Because if they followed me for long enough, then they love me. Now I don't want them to just love me. I want them to see me.
Yeah.
And then those were the conversations on race. Those were the conversations on COVID. Those were the conversations, all the hard conversations on politics that I began to have. But I had them in a way where people that may not stand on the same side of an issue with me still walked with me and still trusted me enough to have these conversations.
Yeah, staying engaged. I actually think that one of the things that's the difference in someone who can, in the way that you've approached it, actually have a chance at softening sharp edges of the heart is time that you are engaged, the length of time that you're engaging someone in a topic where there's disagreement.
Yes.
Because it's when you have the walking with for the length of time that you start to see the opposite side of the issue or walk in the other person's shoes. The empathy doesn't exist in the snap comment that gets left in a Facebook
thing. And it's so important to continue to humanize all of these issues. And that's what I try to do, you know? If somebody, I can't remember if we've talked about this before, but if somebody DMs me like this rage-filled roar, right, with their thumbs, I always just open up my camera, and even if I've never replied to them in anything before, and I send them a video, and I'm like, hey, this is Carlos. Like, I just wanted you to see my eyes, because I wanted you to hear my voice to let you know that, like, I'm for you. Like, I just, before we even talk about any of these, I'm for you. Bro, 99.99% of the time, the conversation just shifts to a human space as opposed to just this.
An issues debating space. Yeah.
Because when you see someone's eyes.
I'm going to steal that.
When you see someone's
eyes. That's good.
It diffuses everything.
Oh.
Yeah.
The humanity piece in social media is the thing that's been discounted in a way that makes the vitriol exist.
Yeah.
And if you can actually get back to the human space, it's
so
everything.
Yeah.
I've seen you talk recently about this, and I've actually asked other people in this little tour this question, because I'm personally struggling with this as we have the big global news stories that are just in the media in real time.
Yeah.
Afghanistan, Haiti earthquake, the Delta variant, like there's a lot happening.
Yeah.
And I'm struggling with where the line is for being involved, staying informed, keeping it as a part of my consciousness and not having it do something that turns me cynical or angry or overwhelmed or in some way compromises peace when this is a broader peace conversation. How do you hold space for both?
Yeah, it's such a good question because people aren't doing it right now. People are, I think a psychologist termed it doomsday scrolling.
Yeah.
Doom scrolling is what they called it, doom scrolling. And where it's like, we can't get enough bad news. There was a newspaper in Switzerland that decided, you know what, it's been too much bad news. We're gonna do a day of just good news, right? So that day of good news, they lost 3/4 of their subscribers because people...
They didn't get what they were looking for.
People are addicted to bad news.
Oh.
And so we don't know. It's triggering our fight or flight. Like, that's what it's doing. It's triggering our, like, we're constantly now, like, it makes us feel better for a moment. Our serotonin levels are popping. We weren't created to consume the amount of content we consume, good or bad.
Yeah.
And I teach on this all the time. As human beings, up until 100 years ago, from the dawn of humanity to 100 years ago, we moved at 3 miles an hour. And all we knew about was what was happening in our hood.
Yeah.
Like, that, there was no way to know that something was happening in Afghanistan. There was no way to know that there was a Delta variant somewhere. We weren't created with the capacity in our souls or our psyche for this to happen. So, like, what do? Burn all the phones? Do we throw the TVs away? No. Like, we have to take practical, tangible steps in order to lessen what I call the story stress in our lives. It's the story stress. And so, you know, what do we do? You know, like, so for instance, like for me, I went and I bought an alarm clock, like an actual alarm clock that you plug into a wall. People may not know what this is, but in the 80s, when I would wake up, it was an alarm clock that played Z93 in the morning. All it did was wake me up. I couldn't pick it up and swipe it. Like, it was just that.
Just a rectangle.
Just a rectangle that with a clock on it. Maybe in some hotels you see those things. And now that's what wakes me up, because there's data that shows and studies that show that the first 15 minutes we're awake, we consume, if we use our phone as our alarm clock, more content than our great-grandparents consumed in a month. So 15 minutes in the morning before you put your feet on the floor and you're swiping, you're consuming more content than our grandparents, great-grandparents did in a month. And we wonder why we're having this epidemic and pandemic of mental illness.
Yeah.
It's because we weren't created with this capacity.
And we're also starting our day, if you're doing that, indulging in a bunch of negativity.
Negativity.
And so the foundation of our day is
built...
fear and anxiety and what's lacking.
Yeah.
And it just creates a scarcity perspective where all of a sudden now all you see all day is scarcity.
And so since that's a problem, like I have put steps into place. My phone doesn't, you know, go to bed with me. I read my news from an actual newspaper. So there's an actual thing that
Printed on paper?
Yes. A man will drive by my home in the morning, probably in a Trans Am, and throw it out his window. And I walk out, like, leave it to Beaver, Mr. Cleaver. And I walk out with my, I don't have a robe, I wish I did. And I pick up my newspaper, and that's where I read and consume my news. And guess what? The next time I see news is the next morning when I get my paper. And I promise there's not going to be something that happens in the news cycle that you won't be, but it just, it stops me from scrolling, you know, things like that. So I'm constantly trying to find things that I can plug into my life that allows me, turning off the push notifications on my phone, that allows me to not feel like I'm constantly connected to bad news.
Huge.
Yeah.
So in the dealing of hope, I know that's a big part of who you are and how, if I were to describe you, I would use the word hope dealer as you, I think, would describe yourself as such. In a world that has as many of these things happening, and in the context of whether it's how we reach for courage or how we preserve peace, talk about the importance of hope in either context.
Yeah, you know, hope is, I feel like, the fuel that's going to move people these days from point A to point B.
Yeah.
People feel paralyzed without hope. People are going to find their hope in different spaces, okay? I find my hope in my relationship with God. I find my hope in my faith. Some people might find their hope in family. Some people may find their hope in, it could be anywhere. But as long as what we're trying to do as humans is help other people have hope, the second it turns into, because you can see that shift on a, you know, in a conversation with you. Are you trying to get that to discourage that person?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you trying to build hope in that person?
Yeah.
And that's just kind of my litmus test with everything I do is, am I building hope in with every conversation that I'm having? When they leave me in that conversation, are they more hopeful or more discouraged? Now, I'm not perfect, but that's the goal. Like that's what I'm just trying to do every single day.
Yeah. I have an anxious kid.
Yeah.
I have four kids. I'm sure they all have anxiety on different levels.
Yeah.
One of them is the anxious kid.
Yeah.
I was the anxious kid. And
as was I.
And the conversations that we have, he's a deep thinker. He talks about, I've got a tsunami of anxiety. Like a tsunami.
Yeah.
Like that is magnitudinally speaking, a lot of anxiety. And I said, well, what is it? What's your big question? What is the thing that your brain keeps asking you? And he said, I just keep going to this, like, what could go wrong? Like, I'm walking in, it was the first week of school this week. What could go wrong?
Right.
And I just immediately, like, what could go right?
Yeah.
What if every time your brain said, what could go wrong, what could go right?
Yeah.
And it's an easy to say and hard to embrace practice. Like, for his little mind that is wired to be on the hunt for the thing that can go wrong, he tends to find it, right?
Wow.
He'll come back and be like, well, I was right.
Yeah.
That guy I don't like got assigned to my class or that thing. Like, he was looking for it and he found it. And we ended up having to get into a spot where it was like, okay, here's your journal.
I need you
to start your day making a list of some things that can go right in your day today. And lo and behold, you know, and it's not like manifesting. It's just if you go looking for the good, you'll find the good. If you go looking for the bad, you're going to find the bad. You're going to go find what you're looking for. Because that's the way the world actually works.
Yeah.
And I think hope works that way, too. If you go into your day with a hopeful disposition, thinking, oh, you know, I'm going to find something to be hope-filled with, you're going to find something.
And do that first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, like for me, I do this thing, praise and thanksgiving. Like that's what I do every single, I praise God for who he is, and I thank God for what he's done. And I make sure to do that every single morning. I put on a little, you know, worship record, and I write it in my journal. And that one act of like being grateful and thankful every single day, I mean, that can readjust your mind in no time at all. And so like, yes, I think it's so important in order to, for other people to find hope from you, you have to find it yourself.
Yeah, my coffee maker takes 7 minutes to fill itself. Those 7 minutes every morning is when I'm writing down what from the previous 24 hours I've had to be thankful for.
Awesome.
But it's a prompt for the next 24 hours to be on the lookout for the things I'll have to write down the following day.
And yeah.
I go into my day looking for things. I'm going to find those things.
Yeah.
It's just it's a simple thing.
So good, man.
With your kids, you got three kids.
I do.
When it comes to how you think about instilling courage in them, what are the things that you do as a dad or that you and Heather do as parents to encourage them to push against the trap of comfort or putting themselves out there or living into why God's put them here?
Yeah, they definitely have no choice because they've got parents that risk everything. We're risk takers, both Heather and myself. We're jumping out of airplanes. We're climbing, ice climbing walls on top of, you know, and so, and then, you know, we have to remember that. I think everyone has to remember that, that you're with your kids, courage is going to look different for all of them. And they're, so what may look like courage for you, you have to remember that every kid has, you know, not every kid's going to climb, you know, to the top of some mountain, but courage for them may be walking down the street if you have an anxious kid, you know, meeting somebody else. That's courage. So recognizing those places of
the
courage.
The nuances of individual courage.
Individual courage, you know? And so, like, we can't just have, like, 1 meter of, like, courage is here and not courage is here. That thing is going to have to shift for every single kid. It's going to look like a triangle here, like a circle here, like a rectangle here. And so, you know, for us and our kids, that's what we're trying to make sure we're doing is like, look at their courage meter and make sure that we're celebrating what's courageous to them.
So good.
Yeah.
I have a few tattoos that have meaning on me.
Yeah.
You have tattoos as well.
Is there
something of note in the things that have been scribed on your body are worthy of noting here?
I mean, this is one of my favorites. This just says to pray in Korean. And so my son's Korean. When we went to adopt him in Korea, when he was 6 months old, I had no tattoos on my body at the time, and I got this huge tattoo to pray. And it's actually, tattoos are like taboo in Korea. But this was like just to remember to pray for his birth mom, his birth dad, his family. And so, you know, every day he sees this, and, you know, he's like, are you praying for my birth mom? Like, because I'm like, it could have just ended up a tattoo, but it is a reminder not only to me now, but to him. Yeah, I got a whole bunch of other things as well, but this is the one that
beautiful.
I love
that. I have a daughter, adopted.
Okay.
And we have an open adoption. And
We
have not yet. She's four, but there will be a day where she's going to be able to find the connection that just naturally exists. We had her actually come to her first birthday party.
Wow.
I've never even told this story. But we had her come to the first birthday party. And she was so excited to just reconnect with Rachel and I. We had a really beautiful relationship and understood her rationale for why she had other children and this was the right choice. And when she came into the house, she was really kind of eye contact connected with Rachel and I as Noah, one, is just kind of like getting her bearings and walking a little bit for the first time. And Noah walked right over to her.
Wow.
Like just like right in the eyes. Like, there was something that was just on an instinctual level.
Absolutely.
And it was one of those things like Rachel and I were like, don't cry. Do not cry. Do not cry. This
totally.
Is okay. Everything is great. It's all good.
Yeah.
But there's just, I don't know, adoption. You know, I've talked about my adoption a ton. It's one of those like, it's wild in terms of its emotional roller coaster-ness and rich in a depth that I could have never appreciated.
And talk about courage. I think it's funny how people see people that adopt as the courageous ones, and it's like, no, it's her mom.
Oh.
It's the mothers, it's the birth, like, they're the ones that we're learning courage from, right?
Yeah.
It's just a beautiful thing.
I also, too, this is such a random thing, we can cut it if we need to, the question I actually get most from people who are interested in adopting but have not themselves adopted is how they worry that they might not connect to their adopted child in the way that they do their biological children.
Right.
And I'm like, I have not one day, literally, in the life of this 4.5-year-old beauty / monster, one time looked at her and said, oh, there's my adopted daughter.
No.
Not one time.
Yeah.
She's my daughter.
I know.
I think of her in the same ilk and line of any of my children.
Well, it's so true. Losiah, you know, he does not look like me. And I don't even remember that we adopted him.
Right?
I'm like, adopt people are like, oh, are you adoption advocates? I was like, wait, We adopted? Like, I he's just been a part.
Isn't it wild? It's such a crazy thing. So, what are you most excited about in what is coming up? Man. I mean, I know that we talked about, like, that it feels like you're on the precipice of some really big God-created stuff.
Yeah.
But what excites you right now?
You know, people say that, you know, and I'm like, I mean, I feel like this is, like I'm on the big part, right? Like people are like, oh, you're on the step of big things. And I'm like, I'm doing the big things.
You
like,
are
I'm,
doing like, the big like, things. Like, I don't want to dismiss
if this was it, like if this is what I'm doing, like I'm just like, every once a month I find a need and I get my Insta Familia to help out on that need, bro, I could retire. Like
right?
I feel like this is great. I'm 46 years old and I am just now, I feel like stepping into the sweet spot of my life.
I totally agree.
I just now am stepping into like, this is what I was created to be.
Yeah.
This is what I was created to do. So like all that stress that I was going under when I was 25 and like, why am I not in my dream, whatever it may be, it took until right now. And
yeah.
Now I'm just now stepping into it. So what I'm excited about is, well, now that I'm in it, let's see what the next 15, 20 years look like of actually sitting in this sweet spot, man. So I'm really excited about it. I've worked really hard on my spiritual health, my mental health. I'm healthier than I've ever been.
Yeah.
And physically even. And I'm just like, man, I feel like I could run through a freaking wall like
right.
all the time. Like it's just good. So I guess I'm excited about life, about living, you know, about seeing what the adventure is going to hold every single day. I love it.
What I actually find interesting is, I don't know how much of what existed previously, whether it was identity or work or whatever,
yeah.
that was you focused.
Yeah.
But the work that you're doing right now is you shining your light to others.
Yeah.
And the other focused nature of the work is the thing that feels like it is like unlimited potential and all upside.
Yeah.
And probably also is what creates that feeling inside because chasing the things, and I'm speaking now from personal experience, when I was chasing title or salary or status or whatever, those were all me-related, ego-driven things,
absolutely.
And it's only after focusing, hey, is there a way that I might be able to use any gift to, in something I write or something I say, affect breakthrough or change someone in someone else, and that's... It's everything. I was running the other day, and I got...
Wait, you were running?
I know. I do like to run. I'm trying to run like you. But I'm running, and I do like a Ask Me Anything.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a long run.
Yeah.
And somebody... It was just a snarky comment, but I couldn't help it.
Uh-huh.
It was like, you used to be a top exec, and now you run and talk into your phone. and I couldn't help it. You know, like, I answered the question. I was like, you know what? The unhappiest I've ever been in my life was as an executive in everyone else's dream job.
Yeah.
And the happiest I've ever been in my life, more connected to purpose than ever, also comes with the weird side benefit of talking into
running
my phone.
And, talking
and every once in a while, giving you a discount code on a t-shirt. Like, like honestly, like it's weird that the vision of who I thought I'd be then is so disconnected from where I'm at now, and yet it's where happiness and fulfillment and purpose feel connected. And it's just anyway, for whatever part of it is, like there's so many pieces of programming as we're coming up telling us who we have to be affirmed, to be loved, to be enough. And those are those limiting beliefs. Those are those stories.
Yep.
You know, like not necessarily the self-defeating, am I good enough?
Right.
But when you start to feel a tug into a space, the courage that's required is usually to push against the way that society defining what being a real man or being a good girl says you need to do in order to fit a mold.
Right.
I mean, you're way out of the mold.
Yeah.
I'm way out
of
the mold. And I think our happiness and healthiness is a reflection of the departure from that mold.
Yeah, no, it is. And it feels, doesn't it feel so good?
So
like
good.
You can breathe.
I mean, I'm wearing a leather bracelet now.
Yeah.
So like truly the sky's the limit. I mean, let's not mince words.
That's amazing.
All right, last question, because I am going to have this as a part of the Rise Together podcast. You're coming back. If there was a single thing that you would offer as a piece of advice or an action that someone could take, whether it's how to better cultivate some courage or maintain and preserve some peace, what's the single piece of advice, the word you would give to someone today?
Yeah, you know, I think it's gonna go more along the lines of peace. And forever, I used to think that piece needed to look like a puddle, okay? Like just a puddle of still water, right? But at least in the Bible, when I read anything about peace, it says peace is like a river. And so what I want people to understand, you can believe in the Bible or not, I think this is actually a great idea about peace. Peace doesn't look still. If you're looking for peace in no waves, in crystal glass water, that's not what it's gonna look like. There's gonna be boulders, there's gonna be currents, there's gonna be banks. Peace actually moves. There's gonna be white water. So you can actually find your peace in the middle of chaos. And so don't think that just looking for peace, that you're just gonna find it in like on vacation, like just on the, no, you can find peace in the middle of a whitewater river if that's what your life looks like right now. So don't be scared to find it that way.
Peace is where you make it. Ben Rector said it, sang it on the back patio with me.
That's awesome.
Carlos Whitaker, Los Witt, I appreciate you, brother.
Dude, thank you, man.
Thank you for bringing me into the kitchen.
You're welcome.